The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and FlightBridge Ed in their entirety. This is the FlightBridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
Hey everybody, Eric back with you. Today we're going to do a podcast on a nightmare series case that I've wanted to do for some time. Before we jump in, I just want to say thank you for just being patient. We did launch the new website. The new website's been up and running now for approximately 2 weeks, and it's working really, really well. We did have a few problems with the practice exam extension. So you've probably received emails from us just explaining that. So we appreciate your patience. We did have a corrupt piece of software, and we decided to kind of get rid of that software, and we had to reinstall a new extension, or I should say Evan had to reinstall a new extension. So that's all up and running, and so we're really excited to see how that works out. Remember to go on to the community and you can check it out. You can log in anytime you do anything with a website, whether you purchase something, you register for a class or anything, you have to basically register for the website. And that gives you a full access to everything. So you can go on to the community and set up a profile. And again, that's where we're going to do a lot of discussion based on the podcasts and different things trending in the FOMED world. Just got done with SMAC, or I should say SMAC just got completed in Dublin, Ireland. Was not able to make it there, but we just really tried to be active on Twitter and ended up in the top 10 in tweets with myself, Clint Klepping, and Mike at Second Shift FBE. All did really, really well. So pretty cool, and I owe all that to Clint. He was manning the boards a lot of the time, really trying to keep us up on what was actually trending, and so we want to really thank him. All right, so back to the podcast. So what we're going to do today is we're going to do a nightmare series case. We're going to do something we haven't ever done as far as a topic goes. And we're going to look at an anaphylaxis, and we're going to look at how that kind of plays into our treatment in the pre-hospital setting. We're going to look at maybe some differences, and I'm going to talk about some things that I've seen in not only scenario-based testing, new hire exams, if you're going to go in an interview for exams, or I should say interview for tests, or interview based on trying to get hired, I'll talk about kind of things that I've seen there. So this case actually is kind of close to my heart. This is something that happened to my wife, and I may have mentioned this in other podcasts, but this is something that happened about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. While we were building our house, or I should say I was building this house, she would come out and stop in and say hi and come out at the end of the day after she saw her patients. And we didn't have a bathroom, obviously, set up at that point. I think we had an outhouse out here for a while, and we took that and had them come pick that up. But so she had to use the bathroom. And so she went to the very back of the house, kind of down below the house. And we live on 6 acres. We live on the river, Barron River, and we have a lot of trees. We've got thousands of trees surrounding the house. And so she was kind of down in this area where I actually mow. And ironically, about 3 or 4 days before that, I had mowed over this area, and I noticed, things flying around and kind of, dismissed it. I saw maybe 5 or 6 things flying around when I mowed over this area, and didn't really think anything of it, to be honest with you. So I'm up in the house, and I'm actually tiling the foyer, and I'm all the way on the other end of the house. She says she has to go to the bathroom, so she goes down there. And apparently, when she was using the bathroom, a yellow jacket had landed on her pants, on her kind of her thigh, and she swatted it away. And when she did that, it got aggressive. All of a sudden, I heard screaming. And if you've ever met my wife, she's very calm. She's she just doesn't really get very rattled by things. And I had the tile saw going at the time, and so I really faintly heard something. And when I shut the tile saw off, I ran down and ran through the house and came out the garage, and heard her screaming. And as she walked around the corner, she was completely covered from her waist all the way up on her head, completely covered with yellow jackets. She was hysterical. She was in a full anxiety attack. It was extremely traumatizing for me. Obviously seeing her suffer like that, trying to get these yellow jackets off of her. So I was able to get her up near my truck, and I was able to get all the yellow jackets off of her. They had gone down her pants. They had stung her about 50 to 60 times. She was absolutely hysterical, as you could imagine, and very, very upset. It actually gets me a little emotional thinking about it. Sorry. I look back at this, and you do this job as long as we have. We have listeners obviously all over the world, and I know you guys. You've done this a long time, and I seem to always kind of slow down when I get into serious situations like that. And I was still able to stay pretty clear in my head, but I realized really, really quickly that I had nothing there. We were out in the middle of nowhere. I didn't have anything. I mean, if she would have gone right into an anaphylactic reaction, I would have been pretty much in trouble. And so trying to decipher based on how she was breathing, was this an anxiety attack? Was she already suffering from some respiratory issues? Was really, really tough. And, I felt really helpless. I can't believe I'm getting so emotional. I felt really, really helpless with this, and just trying to console her and keep her safe. And so I think this is a really good kind of case to talk about. So let's jump into the different aspects of anaphylaxis, and then we'll kind of recap, and we'll kind of look back at how she did and the things that we need to consider. We know that anaphylaxis is a vasogenic or distributive shock, right? And so we know that all patients that present in anaphylaxis have a very high potential to get hypotensive, to have this big container failure. This doesn't always happen, and this doesn't always happen immediately. And so we have to understand that we can classify allergic reactions where we just have urticaria, we just have maybe a rash, hives, things like that. And we can look at those patients and we can say, okay, these patients, if they don't have any respiratory issues, if they're not wheezing, if they don't have any issues with their tongue, is their tongue itchy, is their throat itchy, things like that, then a lot of times those patients are going to do really well with just giving them a little bit of Benadryl and watching them, and they seem to do fine. Obviously, we know any allergic reaction, we all have issues. We all may have issues with pollen. We may have little things like that, and we take Benadryl, and it basically blocks that histamine release and makes us feel better. But we have to understand that anaphylaxis, or a true emergency, Benadryl, Solu-Medrol, dexamethasone, those medications are absolutely the last thing you should be thinking of. And this is one of my kind of pet peeves, and this is something I've seen throughout my whole career. I've seen this in testing situations for new hires wanting to get a job, whether this is a ground ambulance or in the HIMSS industry. And I don't know what it is, but it seems like we have a fear to give epi. And I know in ACLS, I know way back in paramedic school, we were taught to always be cognizant of medications with any patient over 50, 55 years old. You would half your lidocaine dose, you would lower your epi dose, you would always kind of be a little bit cautious when giving those medications. But I can say that when it comes to an anaphylactic reaction, if you have somebody that has a rash and they have also respiratory involvement, they're already wheezing like that, I don't care if they're 80 years old. The only thing that's going to save them, the only thing that's going to make them better is epi. And no matter how old they are, no matter you know, if they've got cardiac history, anything whatsoever, epi is what's going to save their life. That's it. Benadryl's not going to do it. Solumedrol's not going to do it. Dexamethasone's not going to do it. And I can't tell you how many times that I've given a scenario and patient has respiratory wheezes, audible wheezes, and epi's not even the first consideration. And so we have to remember that epi is absolutely at all times the first consideration on anybody. It's got to be given. If you've been doing this long enough, you know that we've given epi for a long time sub-Q. When we were taught to do it sub-Q, we were taught to do it kind of in the back of the arm. But we know in the last, man, I'd say 5 years, maybe we have changed that, and now we always give it IM. One of the things we have to realize is that how do we train patients that actually have a known severe allergic reaction? The doctors train them to always give it based on an auto-injector in the leg, in the thigh. And the reason why is that it's got about a 500% greater absorption than anywhere else, including the shoulder. And so we as clinicians need to give it the same way. You know, don't be giving it in the shoulder. Don't be giving it anywhere but the thigh. So how do we do this? How do we do this as far as our dosing goes? When we look at dosing for epi, we have obviously our adult dose. Our adult dose is 0.3 to 0.5 milligrams. And we have always kind of been taught to use that range. But we have to remember that most adult patients need that 0.5. They need that higher dose. You know, a 0.3 would probably be a tiny little female patient. But any adult male, anybody that I think a normal adult size, you're going to be absolutely fine to give 0.5. When you think about a pediatric patient is going to be 0.01 milligrams per kilogram. But again, you're going to give this IM, you're going to give it in the thigh, and you're going to get that greater absorption, significantly greater, 500% increase in absorption over the shoulder. We have to think that your thighs are the biggest muscle groups, and so they have the best circulation, they've got the best absorption potential. So if we go back to, we have our urticaria, we have our isolated hives type of a patient, and so what we have to really worry about is those patients that are wheezing. They already have respiratory involvement. We get on scene, they have some hives, they've got some wheezing. So we need to intervene on these patients immediately. Epi is going to be the first thing you grab. This is also something that we need to always consider in asthma attacks as well. And I don't mean to get kind of off the cuff, but you know, asthma, a severe asthma attack like that, even a severe COPD issue where they're really getting tight, you know, I've had protocols where we have always done the same thing. We'll give sub-Q, or now we would give IM epi at 0.3 to 0.5. It's no different. It's the same kind of response that's going on. So we have to remember that epi is a great thing in those cases. It's a life-saving drug, and we have to be able to get away from that mantra that, oh, there's contraindications to epi. That is absolutely hogwash. So you get on scene and you have a patient that has wheezes, they have hives. It's not time at that point to give Benadryl, right? The Benadryl is only going to kind of serve the purpose of making the patient more comfortable, getting rid of that itchiness, getting rid of that uncomfortableness. We've all have had that in hay fever and in different things. And so it's epi until you have a change in signs or symptoms. You can actually have patients that don't present with a urticaria, or it may be very, very mild. They may not have any respiratory involvement, but they actually may be profoundly hypotensive. And so I think the great thing that you should always kind of consider in any patient that is in shock. So you get on any patient that's in shock, right? We're going to go through our differential diagnosis. Is you need to always consider anaphylaxis as a source. It could be as simple as somebody just got prescribed an antibiotic and they've taken one dose. It may not have given them a response of urticaria, hives, any wheezes, but it could absolutely dump their blood pressure. It could put them in that severe vasogenic shock. And so we have to be good investigators. We've got to be that master clinician, and we have to always suspect any patient in shock, use differential diagnosis, questioning family members, the patient if you can, and try to identify if this is an isolated hypotension based on an allergic reaction. If we continue down the road and our patients aren't getting better, we have given our epi, we've given a couple doses of epi, and they're still not getting better, at that point, you need to, again, stay aggressive. By, you know, you're not going to want to stop giving epi, but that's where we would then establish an epi drip. The quickest and easiest way to establish an epi drip is going to be utilize your cardiac dose. So get one of those boxes out. That's 1 milligram of 1 to 10,000. And you're going to inject that into a 1,000 mil bag, so 1 liter bag of normal saline or LR. You're going to mix that up, spike your bag with a 60 drop set, and that gives you a concentration of 1 mic per mil. And so your dose is going to be 2 to 10 mics per minute. So very, very easy. Very, very easy. You know, this is the same way if we ever move to push dose pressors. Epi is going to be that kind of push dose presser. That's going to be the best way to mix up your epi, is do the same thing. You can get a 10cc syringe. You can draw up 10 mils, which is going to be 10 mics, and you can give small pushes. And I know physicians will actually utilize that same kind of concept in an anaphylaxis, in the severe anaphylaxis, where they've given volume, tons and tons of volume, 2, 3, 4, 5 liters of volume. They have no change. We are going to be giving our epi drip, and they would give push dose pressors. So we have to also remember that we can't forget the volume, right? Volume should be automatic. You come in on this patient, you identify they've got hives, you identify that they've got wheezes now, they're also hypotensive, and you know, you obviously immediately start a some type of oxygen source. I would actually start a non-nasal breather, and I'd take the mask off, I would put a nebulizer in place, and I would give them a nebulizer. I would also, at that point, start an IV and start dumping the volume in. They're going to need a lot of volume. So start dumping that volume in. Start getting, you know, obviously, if you have multiple people on scene, that epi IM doses in the thigh should be going in at the same time. This should be the first thing you do. And then, again, if you are dumping all this volume in, you still aren't getting a response, you need to start giving that epi. And that epi is not going to be based on the blood pressure. The epi is going to be solely based on trying to relieve the symptoms of the anaphylaxis. Obviously, it's going to help the patient squeeze down. It's going to serve two purposes, but also always remember, I should say, that you're trying to treat the anaphylaxis. You don't want them to go into that, you know, respiratory collapse or respiratory arrest. So when do we start going into giving Benadryl? You know, this is one of those things that I see a lot of times in EMS, is that we're really good at giving Benadryl. We're really good at giving Selumetrol. But again, we're not good at giving epi when needed. And so I would say that once you've given your epi doses, once you've given, you know, given your epi drip, if you've made it to that point, then absolutely, if you can, give a Benadryl dose. So that's an H1 blocker. So H1 blockers are great. Again, they're just going to kind of make the patient feel more comfortable. It's going to get rid of the urticaria, get rid of the hives, get rid of the itching. But as far as the severe signs and symptoms, it's not going to do anything for the patient. If you're in a hospital situation, then they actually will give an H2 blocker. An H2 blocker that's very, very common is retinidine. And we actually have retinidine at the house. My wife gives it to me all the time. I actually think it's great. It doesn't make me drowsy. And it's a great medication for, you know, just a simple allergic reaction. I get hives sometimes, or I'll get hay fever if I'm mowing, or things like that. And I think it works really, really good. Actually, the kind of the science shows that an H1 blocker in association with an H2 blocker is actually much better. And so, you know, if you have that ability, and obviously most agencies, most HIMS agencies don't carry any H2 blockers for that purpose. And then what about our steroids? Our steroids, obviously we have salumeterol and we have dexamethasone. And so what are the differences? Well, the big thing, salumeterol is kind of a lower concentration. If you had the two, they're basically made the same. They're interchangeable, but the dexamethasone is a very high concentration. So from my readings, from listening to other podcasts and things like that, dexamethasone is going to be the medication of choice if you have both of those. And so a great dose for dexamethasone at anaphylactic reaction is going to be 0.6 milligrams per kilogram, and most often max dose of 10 milligrams. But do we give this on every patient? And that's the thing. You're only going to give a steroid if you've given epi. If you've just given Benadryl for a patient with urticaria, things like that, there's no need whatsoever to give any type of steroid or anything like that. So only if you've given epi, only if you've treated them for a severe anaphylaxis or allergic reaction are you going to give any type of steroids. They prefer dexamethasone for a few reasons. Number one is it's got a very long half-life. Even if we're giving this in the field, always consider this if you can give it. Again, don't stop giving your epi. Don't get away from treating the serious stuff. But if you've gotten that stuff under control, then start giving your secondary medications like your Benadryl, like your H2 blocker, ranitidine, if you have that available, and obviously your steroids. Onset for dexamethasone is about 4 to 6 hours, but it's got a half-life of about 2 days. So it's got a huge, huge half-life, and they like that because then they don't have to send the patient home once they get to the hospital and they release them. They don't have to send them home with any steroids. So it's got a very long half-life, which is great. So we've talked about volume, right? And when I mean volume, you guys, you may dump in 2, 3, 4 liters of fluid. I've heard of cases where patients are still hypotensive after 8 or 9 liters of fluid. Some patients are so container open. Their container is so vasodilated that it's going to take a lot of volume. You've got the epi going. And so, you know, kind of if we recap, I would constantly reassess my lung sounds. I would constantly reassess my patient's ability to speak. Are they speaking 1 to 2 word sentences when you arrive? Are they stridorous? What happens if they get stridorous? You know, if you have a patient that's stridorous, that is an absolute life threat at that point. And that is a patient that has an impending doom to them. That's about to die. Patients that are stridorous like that, you need to always consider that they're about to die. So those patients are the patients that you're going to intervene airway-wise. You're going to RSI them. But that patient is very, very brittle. And so you always want to have a backup. And that backup, unfortunately, in this case, is always going to be a surgical airway. So any patient you come on scene or in your care, and they're stridorous whatsoever, that patient is a very, very brittle, sick patient. You need to intervene. You need to take that airway, and you need to have a surgical airway like open and ready to go, because you may get down there and, you know, have vocal cord view and may not even get anything in. So always have that backup in that kind of setting. What about side effects, or are there any side effects to anaphylaxis that we have to worry about? One of the big side effects that happens, and this happens in both young patients and old patients, is patients will actually have MIs. And they're having, you know, I think that the providers think that they had an MI because of the epi. You know, we're given this epi, and that epi has caused this heart rate to go up, and it's caused this patient to have an MI. The thing to remember is there's a syndrome called Kunis syndrome. And Kunis syndrome is a phenomenon where, based on a severe allergic reaction, obviously we have histamine release, we have an inflammatory response. So we have all these inflammatory mediators, we have all these mast cells that flood our bloodstream. And those mast cells, those histamine, that histamine release actually flood and they get circulated into our coronary arteries. Some patients will actually have a vasospasm. They'll have vasospasm and vasoconstriction based on those inflammatory mediators and those mast cells, and it will cause an MI. And so, you know, if you see a patient that's young, that's having an MI, right, they start having severe chest pain, you do a 12 lead, and they're having a big anterior MI, anterior lateral MI, it's not because you gave them epi. It's not because of your treatment. It's because of the anaphylaxis that's caused those mast cells, those inflammatory mediators to flood the coronary arteries, cause spasm, and cause the MI. So obviously that would be a you know, real bad situation that would kind of double your care. You need to start going down the road of an MI. Obviously those patients, if you're in transport, you need to probably activate a STEMI at that point. I would call the hospital, explain what's going on, and treat the patient accordingly. As far as my wife goes, so she did very, very well, actually. You know, once I was able to get her calmed down, we were able to get all the yellow jackets off of her. You know, she, like I said, was stung, I would say, approximately 60 times. She did have some local reddening and hives on her head and her face. But other than that, she really did well. She didn't have any respiratory involvement whatsoever. She didn't have anything as far as wheezing, any itchy throat, or really any secondary issues. And so that was really, really good. Once I was able to get her calmed down, I realized I didn't have anything with me. We jumped in my truck and we went down about 3 miles to a store, and I was able to get her some Benadryl and gave her some Benadryl just for the hives and the itchiness. But I can tell you that I have everything I need in that situation now. I will never not be prepared like that. And I think that really, you know, shows you that you may have all the training, you may have all the knowledge, but you never know what's going to happen. And when you have a loved one like that that gets attacked and stung, it's pretty traumatizing. We have a big black lab named Murray. He's about 110 pounds, and he's about 7 years old now, but he was actually down there with her, and he got stung multiple times as well. So he does not like wasps or bees or anything like that, and he tries anything buzzes him, he eats them now. He tries to get them and kills them. So kind of a funny story. But anyway, that's all I have for this podcast. You know, I think it's just important that we have to focus on the epi. The epi is the medicine that's going to save this person's life, and we have to remember to go with a thigh. We have to remember to get a good history. If these patients have an epi auto-injector, you need to always consider this to be a serious, serious thing. You know, we get only the best information we can based on family members, dispatch, and we know that sometimes the information is not correct. And so if you get on scene and somebody says they've already given themselves their auto-injector and they're still having those signs and symptoms, you better pucker, because this is a serious situation and you need to be extremely aggressive and continue giving that epi. If you're in a rural environment, I would definitely launch Air Medical, and I would just be aggressive. If your patient's stridorous, if they're severely wheezing, I would immediately prepare for intubation and always have a backup with a surgical airway. You just never know. I think we have to also understand that anaphylaxis is, it's not as common as we think. I mean, there are a lot of people that die from these types of stings. I was just reading on this, but an average adult male, if they were stung over 160 times by yellow jackets, that could be lethal. There was a child that I was reading on that died last year that was stung about 300 to 400 times. So it takes a lot, but if you already have, obviously, an allergy to bee stings or wasp stings or yellow jacket stings, all it takes is one sting, and that's all it takes. And so we know that severe anaphylaxis can kill somebody within minutes. You know, I think the average is probably 15 to 20 minutes, but there are people that have died from simple latex, from, you know, bee stings within 1 or 2 minutes. I mean, if they have a severe, severe allergy. So always be aggressive with that epi. Never grab the Benadryl first. Never grab the steroids first. Always go epi until you get a change in signs or symptoms, and we want to fix the respiratory side. That's the key. Fix the respiratory side. Fill the container with volume. If your epi IM doses are not working, start that epi drip immediately and get them to the most appropriate facility. Again, I want to thank you for just the patience on the new website. I hope everybody really likes it. We're very excited about it. Very proud of Evan. I think he built an amazing website. Check out the events. We've got lots of courses scheduled for the remaining aspect of the year. We will continue to put out podcasts, and I apologize for some delays in the podcast. I just think it's just been so busy with this new website launch and the summer and travel and things like that. So we really appreciate you sticking with us and staying with us. And as always, email me if you have any questions or if you have any new content you want to hear and see. We've got some cool stuff coming up that we're going to do. We're going to do a whole series on blood and blood administration, and we're going to do a 2 or 3 part series on labs and how to kind of look at those labs from the perspective of the pre-hospital side, and how do we treat our patients, and can we learn anything from those labs on those transfer patients. So again, I want to thank you, and I will talk to you soon.
This has been a production of the Flight Bridge Ed Podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.